Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Here we are.
Once again, we look at the top of the Comcast building. And Willie,
you know,
it is Comcastic, but so is Mika's penthouse up there, where she's been living, like Howard Hughes, with the bottles all around. And she's been living there. And that aviator movie
is jar.
That aviator movie sure was a good movie.
Good morning.
Wait a second. I'm talking to my friend Willie.
I see that.
Talking to my friend Willie.
Maybe you ought to see him more than once a week so you guys get used to seeing him.
Well, we can talk without a 47-second delay. Yes. Hello!
You act it's the first time in 10 years.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
All right. Good morning.
I am doing fine, thank you.
Live from the International Space Station with that delay.
Exactly. Hello, Mother Earth. We got together. Mm-hmm. Because Willie and I always get together and we do the editorial at about, 2:30, 2:45.
Yeah. We're doing that since odd 7. We go for our run. Yeah.
Odd 8. We go for our run. I go through the park.
We really push each other.
Yeah, too. Yeah. Listening to Miss You while we're running through the park at 2:30 in the morning. And we go, how are we going to set this show up? And so we decided to go really, really salacious today.
Yeah, we're going to lean into the tabloid stuff. We know it sells. We know it gets clicks.
It does.
We know what the people want.
So we're doing Kim K's Met Gala outfit?
It's like that.
Kind of like that. Really, really close to that. But you know, Willie, remember that famous morning from so long ago, '07, when Paris Hilton got out of prison.
Historic.
And I'm still struck by, you know, she came, you know, we were talking about what a fine young wholesome girl she was.
Yeah.
And she'd gone in and, you know, she'd found the Lord. She did her time. Had been working.
I don't think our viewers remember that.
The Gospel, the Proverbs. So that's what we're going to lead with. It's sort of like that this morning.
Okay, yeah. It's Thursday, September 16th.
Really salacious, right?
Yeah, tabloid all the way. What do you have,
Mika? We have Professor of Princeton University, Eddie Glaude Jr. joining us for all this.
And Eddie, how are you doing today?
Wonderfully. '07.
Your grandparents probably said the same thing. Remember back in '07. Well, so how's school going? You started up Princeton. This is the first time you've been in there since '07. The kids are back in.
It's going well. It's nerve wracking though.
Yeah.
You know, yesterday I was in precept and, you know, our little sections and students coughing.
Yeah.
And you could just see the students and myself, everybody just tensed up, you know. So we have a wonderful testing regime and everything, but it's still nerve-wracking.
Still kind of nerve-wracking. Yeah. You know, that's me. I'm a sneezer from way back. That works out really well in planes.
Yeah,
Mika makes me quadruple mask.
No, it's
quadruple mask.
Sneezes.
So can I ask you something, Professor Glaude? There was a debate on Twitter, on the Twitter machine, a couple weeks back. Who was it? Maybe it was Dan Dresner. Somebody said, hey, students that are coming in, you know, don't call your professors like Steve, Mary, Bob. He said, you know, probably call them Professor so-and-so. And a lot of kids got really upset about that. Do they call you? Because I'm just saying, kids, call them professor, okay? Maybe your friends on like the Twitter machine says, oh, you can call them Bob or Mary. No, don't do that. Do they call you Professor Glaude, or do they go, or do they just come up to you and go, Eddie, what's going on?
No.
Good for you.
Call me Eddie. But some of my graduate students do, though.
Well, that's
grown, different. They're adults, and you know, and they're working, so, but... No.
Okay. Well, see, that's good to know.
We settled that.
That's tradition. One of my favorite Madeleine Albright stories is that she had always called Mika's father Dr. Brzezinski. Dr. Brzezinski, Dr. Brzezinski. And then she finished her doctorate and she got on the plane and they were both flying from Columbia down to D.C. and she's walking past. She goes, "Hi, Zbig." She said he almost had a heart attack. But that's appropriate.
No, he asked for. All right.
You know, and the funny thing is, Mika called him Dr. Brzezinski.
Dr. Brzezinski, yes.
That was an Alex joke.
There are some people that I still call Mr. or Mrs. or Doctor, even though it's 40 years later. I can't help myself.
Oh, I call everybody.
Definitely.
I know.
I call everybody.
White House reporter for the Associated Press, Jonathan Lemire.
Mr.
Way
Lemire.
Too early
great
for
to
us
see you.
And with us now. Let's get to the news. It's not that salacious.
Here's the payoff.
No.
We do setup, then we do 5 minutes, and then we hit the punchline.
Not that salacious.
Yeah. And here's
President
the pitch.
Joe Biden announced a security partnership with the United Kingdom and Australia yesterday in an effort to counter China's rising power. Kind of a chess move. A senior administration official described the pact as historic and said it would increase cooperation among the three nations on military defense, cyber threats, and supply chain security in the Indo-Pacific region. As part of the agreement, the U.S. plans to share its nuclear-powered submarine technology with Australia. Just a handful of countries, including China and Russia, have nuclear-powered submarines. Biden said the U.S. will work with Australia over the next 18 months to determine every element of the nuclear submarine acquisition process, including the safe production and use of the subs. The move wasn't aimed at any one country.
Other than China.
But Biden has pointed to China.
For like everybody, but China especially.
But Biden has pointed to China as one of the biggest national security threats facing the U.S., and it comes in stark contrast to the previous administration's relationship with one of America's staunchest allies, which was at times contentious. In a 2017 phone call between the newly elected President Trump and Australian Prime Minister, Trump blasted the Australian leader over a refugee agreement and boasted about the magnitude of his Electoral College win before abruptly ending the call more than 35 minutes early.
So this is interesting. It is a tale of two administrations, Jonathan Lemire. I mean, I was horrified by what our allies thought of us, but Australia has always been one of our closest allies. And we had a rough relationship with them for a good part of the administration. Despite the fact they've been with us side by side. But this is, it's really significant news for people who are just waking up. And it's significant news because obviously China has been dominating events over in that region, building islands, militarizing the South China Sea, and this is a good example of the United States and Australia saying together, yeah, we got an island too. It's called Australia.
It's a big one.
This is a really significant move for the 21st century. I didn't even know it was coming. Talk about the background and the implications of it.
A significant news and indeed salacious, Joe. The number of times
yes.
Page Six has led with an item on Australian submarines, I've lost count.
New submarines, they love it. I know. Like, this is going to be, I'm sure, probably on the front. What's the headline?
Just
for
before
that?
Ben and J-Lo. They just knocked them down one
slot.
It's
J-Lo.
It's Bennifer.
Nukes.
Is it again?
And, Australia. Go ahead.
So a big deal indeed. And one shroud in a little bit of secrecy here. These talks have been going on for some time behind the scenes in the capitals of the U.S. and Australia. It was advised even mysteriously yesterday by the White House saying they have a national security initiative to preview yesterday evening, but didn't get into it until later in the day as to what was coming. And everything then was strictly embargoed. The word China was not mentioned yesterday by President Biden during his event. He stood at the White House flanked by video screens by the prime ministers of the U.K. and Australia. But that event was all about China. Now, they made clear these submarines, which are extraordinarily expensive and difficult to make, they'll be nuclear powered, but will not be equipped with nuclear weapons. All three leaders made sure to hit that note. But it is going to be about projecting strength in that region to counteract China's growing influence. We know from day one of this administration, Joe Biden has painted China as the economic rival for the United States in this century, and that this is a step to try to counter its also geostrategic advantage there. China has slowly tried to grow its influence in the South China Sea, picking up more and more territory, alarming their Asian neighbors. And Australia, yeah. Joe, to your point, is someone the U.S. is prioritizing that relationship with. There'll be a meeting next week where U.S. is in has with other allies, including Japan and Korea, again, strengthening those ties. And it comes at a time when President Xi of China has been reluctant to meet with President Biden, despite efforts to do so at a summit next month. But I should note one last thing. Not everyone's in favor of this deal, beyond perhaps the Chinese. The French.
Oh, they're
the
very angry.
France
yes.
has made
yes.
it very clear yes. that they are unhappy to be left out of this agreement.
Yeah, they're furious about it. And they made that known just this morning. They came yep. out with a public statement saying, why would you cut us out of this deal? We were down the road with Australia for something like this. But if there was any question who this was directed at, just look at the response. The Chinese government came out immediately and said, this is Cold War thinking.
Right.
This is a mistake. The United States shouldn't be doing this.
Right.
And the United States, as we just showed, has gone out of its way to suggest this is not about that. It's just about nuclear propulsion.
Exactly.
Meanwhile, they haven't shared this technology in 60 years, the United States, yeah. with any other country. And now they're doing it clearly, obviously directed at China, and China knows it well.
Yeah, it's like the into the scene of Hunt for Red October. Mm-hmm. And chewing and acting dumb. Why? You've lost another sub. Oh, my God. How could that be? You're upset that we're putting nuclear subs in Australia. What? That was directed at Luxembourg.
Just propulsion.
They're just propulsion. No, I mean, you look historically at where we are with China, and I've said time and again, we need to look at the Chinese as potential allies. We need to look at the Chinese as partners, because we're not going to get much done without China. That said, you look at what Xi's been saying over the past month or so. You look at the actions over the past year. Not only have they moved away from being a more market-oriented economy, you look what they're doing in Hong Kong, what they're doing with the Uyghurs, you look what they're doing all across the region, and you look again at Xi's own speeches over the past month or so, where he's talking like a cold warrior. That appears to be the world that he wants. Okay, fine. You believe there's a cold war. You believe your people have to get tough and get ready for a showdown with the United States. Okay. Well, we can do that too. And so there's just no denying that if Xi continues in this direction, we are unfortunately moving toward a cold war. And in that situation, Australia now finds itself in the position that, well, West Germany was during the actual Cold War. And so suddenly, our most important allies here, Japan, South Korea, and Australia, who, again, we've treated very badly over the past 4 or 5 years.
And, Eddie, this is precisely one of the points that President Biden made when he was justifying the withdrawal from Afghanistan. He said, we don't want to be mired in Afghanistan for another 5 years, 10 years, while the world is moving toward China. This is the new world. This is who we need to be confronting in ways like what we're seeing this morning.
Right. And, you know, for me, as someone who's not really invested in kind of the projection of U.S. power in this way, I'm kind of nervous. One thing I don't want is another Cold War, although I understand the dynamics. You know, we leave one, we have one home at home, we have the situation in Afghanistan. But in light of the disaster of Trumpism, this makes all the sense in the world to me. And I think that's very clear to us.
All right. The White House is defending Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley, against calls from some Republicans to charge him with treason.
Oh, what idiots.
Thank you, General Milley. I have great confidence in General Milley.
I don't think the president is looking for the guidance of members of Congress who stood by while the president of the United States and the leader of their party fomented an insurrection, and many of them were silent.
Yeah, I think that kind of counts them out, yeah. You know, as sort of not, I don't know, what's
treason.
The word, credible. General
treason
Milley.
Does apply to several people in Washington.
It sure does.
General Milley is one of the last.
Treason is a word that can be used in Washington these days. General Milley has come under criticism this week after details surfaced of two phone calls he made to a Chinese general late last year without former President Donald Trump's knowledge. The calls were reportedly meant to reassure Beijing that efforts were in place to prevent the outgoing president from potentially ordering a missile strike against China. Those revelations are outlined in an upcoming book by Washington Post reporters Bob Woodward and Robert Costa. In a statement, a spokesperson for the Joint Chiefs of Staff writes in part, quote, General Milley regularly communicates with the chiefs of defense across the world, including China and Russia. These conversations remain vital to improving mutual understanding of U.S. national security interests, reducing tensions, providing clarity, and avoiding unintended consequences or conflict.
We explained how this happened during the Nixon administration, 1973.
It's not
1974.
Perfect.
1974. Kissinger had to step in at one point when Nixon was doing really badly during the 1973 Arab-Israeli War. And tell the Prime Minister of Great Britain that Nixon wasn't couldn't talk, that he was busy. It's also happened, though, time and again, when you can talk about when Nixon was president, there were assurances going from that administration to leaders across the world. Everything's fine. And so after January the 6th, Eddie, this is something that had to be done, mm-hmm. something that, you know, and I would want my generals, I would want others, whether it was Donald Trump or Richard Nixon or Woodrow Wilson, to say, everything's fine. This is what I love. These people are accusing him of treason for calling up the Chinese and saying, hey, everything's fine. This is democracy. It's messy. Don't take advantage of us. You don't want to try to take advantage of us at this moment. If you do. Mm-hmm. You'll feel sorry. And you're not going to have the excuse to say, oh, they were about to attack us, because I'm here to tell you we're not going to attack you. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I want a general. That's what America wants their generals to do. Why don't we just admit it? They're little snowflakes that melted when General Milley went to the Hill and actually said he read a book on critical race thinking. Right. They just melted. Mm. These little snowflakes that are so delicate, they're so pure, they're so natural, and their mothers told them, and their fathers told them, every one of you is separate and different. There's no one snowflake like another. And yet all of these snowflakes on the Republican side, they're alike in one way. They're all melting because General Milley said the words critical race theory and said, yeah, I've read about it. Good to know that. I've read about Marxism. I've read about it. And they're still in a freak out mode. And here this guy takes steps to defend America, to let China know that we're just fine. Don't take advantage of this situation. Mm. And now they're saying he's treasonous.
So that helps me, Joe, because I was baffled, right?
Oh, it's a critical race theory. They can't get past it. That's what they're running on next year. This is once he did that, he stepped from their tribe to another tribe. And the snowflakes, so all separate, mind you, all started melting.
See, because I couldn't quite understand this, right? I didn't know what was motivating it, but I went abstract. I said, do they have a conception of executive power that's so expansive that even a general can't intervene? That the folks around who inhabit the executive branch can't in some ways ensure the security of the nation? That the commander-in-chief holds everything?
But you just said the word intervene. He never intervened. They weren't around the table, and Donald Trump didn't say, hey, let's bomb China. He goes, I'm not going to do that. No, all he did is pick up the phone. He goes, hey, listen, don't take advantage of the United States. Oh, don't even think about it. If you do, you'll be sorry. So it wasn't really intervening, and they're still melting down.
Yeah, but this helps. This is CRT. Oh, he's left the tribe.
And so he left the tribe, yeah. So now let's accuse him of treason for eating a jelly donut. And having some of the jelly drop on some of his of metals, Willie.
And by the way, the more we learn about this, the more we learn that he was not alone in this effort. Axios reporting that the Defense Secretary Esper directed his department to reach out back channel to China. Hey, we know what this looks like. I know you're watching January 6th. I know you're watching a president who is visibly unwell, who might make irrational decisions right now. We've got this.
We got you.
Don't worry. We've got this. Don't worry. And Jonathan Lemire, General Milley will be on Capitol Hill in just a couple of weeks, actually, testifying about Afghanistan, where all of this will come to a head, where he will be asked these questions by Republicans and Democrats.
Yeah, there's no question this will now become a major focus of those hearings. And certainly Republicans have made it clear they're chomping at the bit to go after him, suggesting that he is traitor. He went outside the chain of command by doing this. But as I said, he wasn't alone. And this is the sort of practice that does happen from time to time in moments of real tension and in crises. You'll note that General Milley's statement there from the Joint Chiefs wasn't a denial by any means. This is not something they're running away from. This was something that was deemed a patriotic duty. And we heard that. That was the voice from the White House yesterday. The White House, look, they sidestepped questions about how President Biden would feel if someone in his chain of command stepped around him and delivered a similar warning, if that were ever to be needed. But repeatedly, I asked White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki about whether the president still had confidence in General Milley. The answer was a resounding yes, that they feel like that he is a patriot. We heard that from the president briefly later in the day as well. So despite Republican calls for Milley to be fired or to resign, there certainly doesn't seem to be any sign of that coming. Instead, the White House believing that he did his job at a time of extreme crisis, January 6th, extreme peril for this nation.
Isn't it? You just have to look at the Republicans. You look at this party that Kurt Bardella was talking about, their continued decline, not only in California, but all across the country. And you look at them and you just sit there and go, wait a second. No, this is a political party that spent the past 5 years trashing the FBI, mm-hmm. who, by the way, got Donald Trump elected. The head of the FBI got Donald Trump elected, trashing the CIA. Trashing the intelligence community, sitting back, being quiet for the most part, especially in the House when Donald Trump said he trusted Russia and Vladimir Putin more than he trusted our intel community. Now they're trashing General Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. Like, this is what we Republicans, back when I was a Republican, this is what we always accused Democrats of doing. We would go around, I'd be campaigning, well, what do you think about the CIA? Well, we're not letting that church commission gut our intel community. You know, we talked about the church commission for like 80 years, or maybe 20 or 30. But it's just insane. This is a party that is now attacking generals, the FBI, the CIA, the intel community, the very people who keep us safe. It's crazy.
So we'll be following this. Still ahead on Morning Joe, fencing is returning around the U.S. Capitol, and police there are asking for backup ahead of this weekend's far-right rally. Plus, former FDA commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb joins the conversation as top scientists question the need for COVID booster shots. And Olympic gold medalist Simone Biles and three other star gymnasts testify before Congress about the sexual abuse scandal that rocked USA Gymnastics. You're watching Morning Joe. We'll be right back.
The UN Refugee Agency, or UNHCR, responds to emergencies and provides long-term solutions for refugees. They provide aid in over 130 countries, including Ukraine, Syria, Afghanistan, and Sudan, where people are forced to flee from war and persecution at their greatest moment of need. UNHCR helps and protects refugees by providing food, shelter, medical care, and other life-saving essentials. The agency jumpstarts relief in three key ways. They transport core relief items stored in even the most remote areas of the world. They deploy expert emergency staff trained to help in crisis situations. And they transfer funds directly to support the emergency. Because of generous supporters and donors, UNHCR can scale up its response within 72 hours of a large-scale emergency. Your support helps provide life-saving aid for refugees whenever and wherever emergencies occur. Donate to USA for UNHCR by visiting unrefugees.org/donation.
It's a beautiful, beautiful shot, Willie. Willie, so just really quickly, a couple things we forgot. Eddie brought up in the break, again, they trash our generals and people that have given their entire life to defending the United States of America and risk their lives time and again. And the intel community, they try, the Republicans trash the intel community. And they said, hey, you forgot. They trash cops when it's their political. Yeah, when you have people that are using American flags to bash the brains in of law enforcement officers, they also don't stand up and defend those cops.
That's right. Talking about January 6th, most Americans aren't going to take a lecture on patriotism and treason from a group of people who cheered on an insurrection and excused it, explained it away, called it a normal tourist visit as cops were being beaten. There were 1,000 cases of assault on police officers that day. And all the people who were calling for patriotism and treason, talking about General Milley, are happy to look the other way about what happened that day.
And are trying to cover up the attacks on the cops.
Yeah.
Are trying to cover up the investigation on why those cops were brutalized and beaten mm-hmm. and abused. Why there was an attempt at an insurrection. Sonia, please. You're right. They're the last people that should be lecturing on patriotism. They're the last people that should be lecturing on treason.
They wanted to overturn the election to take away the foundation of democratic government. They were still happy to do that, and yet now they're lecturing on patriotism and treason.
Well, and they're still again, they're covering it up. And by the way, I said there are three parties: the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, and the Insurrectionist Party, and we need to be clear about that. Well, the Republican Party voted with the Insurrectionist Party to cover up any investigation yeah. that would get to the bottom of how Donald Trump and how other Republican members of Congress worked together to try to commit treason, try to commit insurrection, try to commit sedition against the United States of America. We know there was a conspiracy to commit sedition. You look up the statute, it's clear cut. They were trying to stop a constitutional action, which was the counting of electoral votes. It's right there. That's sedition. That's 20 years in prison. And yet, did every Republican vote to cover that up?
Mm-hmm. Adam Kinzinger, there was
it hurts.
Adam, Liz Cheney. Liz, yeah. But other than that, not many.
All right, a related story and a look at other news making headlines this morning. Ahead of a D.C. rally this weekend in support of the January 6th insurrectionists, Capitol Police have asked the Defense Department to provide support from the National Guard should the need arise. That request came just hours before workers began installing a fence around the U.S. Capitol on Saturday. Once the fencing installation is complete, vehicle access will be limited to Congress and staff. A Homeland Security Department official said earlier this week that the rally is expected to draw about 700 people. 1 in 500 Americans has died of COVID-19 since the start of the pandemic. According to an NBC News tally, there have been more than 670,000 deaths from coronavirus in the United States. Over the past week, the U.S. had an average of more than 152,000 new infections each day. So far, about 54% of the U.S. population is fully vaccinated. About 63% have received at least one dose. And four top American gymnasts, including Olympian Simone Biles, told Congress yesterday that federal law enforcement and gymnastics officials turned a blind eye to Team Dr. Larry Nassar's sexual abuse. NBC News correspondent Ann Thompson was in the hearing room and has the details.
To be clear, I blame Larry Nassar, and I also blame an entire system that enabled and perpetrated his abuse.
Simone Biles and her three fellow gymnasts told the Senate Judiciary Committee in words searing and emotional how adults failed them, ignoring for more than a year their claims of sexual abuse by Team USA doctor Larry Nassar.
I don't want another young gymnast, Olympic athlete, or any individual to experience the horror that I and hundreds of others have endured before, during, and continuing to this day in the wake of the Larry Nassar abuse.
The women particularly blamed the FBI. Michaela Maroney testified in 2015. She told an agent what Nassar did to her in excruciating detail before she told her mother.
I began crying at the memory over the phone, and there was just dead silence. I was so shocked at the agent's silence and disregard for my trauma. After that minute of silence, he asked, "Is that all?"
The FBI didn't officially open an investigation until nearly a year after it first learned of the allegations.
The FBI made me feel like my abuse didn't count and it wasn't a big deal.
Allie Raisman described how the Bureau's inaction haunts her. It's estimated Nassar abused at least 70 gymnasts after the FBI was first told.
It was like serving innocent children up to a pedophile on a silver platter.
I'm deeply and profoundly sorry to...
FBI Director Christopher Wray, who did not lead the Bureau at the time, told the committee that the two agents who lied about their actions are no longer with the Bureau. One took retirement, the other was fired. He added reforms are already underway.
We want to take the pain that that occurred here and use it as a catalyst to teach people the importance of doing the work in the right way.
But Maggie Nichols and her fellow gymnasts want more.
Maggie, what is justice?
I think justice is holding those accountable who failed us continuously and continue to fail us, and those who didn't protect us throughout our gymnastics career and throughout our childhood.
Until someone can answer the question Simone Biles asked.
How much is a little girl worth?
All right. This was incredible. I watched everything. And these women, these incredible young women who were put in this horrible situation, were also, you know, being forced to perform at top level in front of huge crowds while all this was going on. And can you imagine the young woman calls the FBI asking for help, describing the worst kind of abuse you could ever imagine. And he asks, is that all? Let me just say, it takes 6 months at times for them to even get a response. Do you know how many other young girls were abused during that time? It took over a year for anything to happen. Do you know how many children were abused? And that's what haunts these young women, that they feel like they should have done more. And what was even more sort of frustrating and appalling to hear is that the organization that was really kind of in place to have oversight over situations like this is compromised because it works for U.S. gymnastics. And these young women could see that, but nobody else could. It's like they were just left on their own to be tortured, truly tortured. They've been through a lot of therapy. They've been through a lot. But I just wonder, you know, at this point, the FBI has a lot to speak for in terms of why they didn't act quickly. And also, Eddie, can you imagine, like, your daughter or Joe, any of us having our daughter brought into a hotel room and interviewed by the FBI, maybe one female agent, but not really directly involved? I mean, it just, everything about this seems like it happened, you know, in the dark ages.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
My anger
would be...
I'm still furious.
Right, and let's just put it this way. 70 more young girls were molested because of the failure of the FBI to act when
that
these young women
of.
Step forward.
Yeah.
And so the question that needs to be asked to them, Mika, is this all?
Right.
Is this all you're going to do? Just apologize? Is that all?
No.
We need more.
I mean, the FBI is what was at issue yesterday. But if you go back to the beginning of this and the institutional failure around these girls,
safe sports,
this guy over a couple of decades, he worked at Michigan State University first, then at USA Gymnastics. There were 150 women who came forward and said they were sexually abused by him under the guise of medical treatment. How does that go on for 20 years inside any institution and nothing happen about it? And by the way, it's not like the girls and the women weren't reporting it and telling people, but somehow there's a culture of protection around these predators. We've seen it in other places like Penn State and Ohio State. It's a sickness, and you just feel terrible that all these girls, all these women went through this, and they have to live with that trauma through all their success. There's the great Simone Biles standing there with all of her gold medals, and still this is what she carries with her every day.
Absolutely. Yeah. We'll be following this, and coming up, Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney says Democrats need to make a major change if they plan to keep the House's majority. The party's campaign chief joins us straight ahead on Morning Joe. Yeah.
Today and every day, Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Lawmakers who oppose abortion are attacking Planned Parenthood, which means affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. The right to control our bodies and get the health care we need has been stolen from us. And now, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills that would block people from getting the sexual and reproductive care they need. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves health care. It's a human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies and against policies that interfere with decisions between patients and their doctor. Planned Parenthood needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, we can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future. That's PlannedParenthood.org/future.
He's okay. You can't get him to stop talking. And I'm not talking about Joe this time.
Interesting.
Can you believe this?
So baseball. Let's talk baseball really quickly.
Okay, and then
we're still tied. The Blue Jays.
Yeah.
And the Yankees and the Red Sox are tied still for that wild card position. Yankees, so I did something last night, Willie. I'm ashamed of myself.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the pitcher in the eighth inning.
Guys, he's cursing.
I don't know if you know this or not, but you got a no hitter. So we have this Barnacle and Lemire and Joey and Lupica. We're all in this
Red Sox
1946 clubhouse text.
Okay.
And I text at the end of the eighth inning, hey, the Orioles just went ahead. And Barnacle immediately, you just jinxed this idiot.
And you did.
And so I got this thing, when people do that, I call them Mr. America's up in New Canaan, mayor of New Canaan, Rob Malazzi, came into our house. We were watching the World Cup. And with about 2 minutes left, he goes, I can't believe we're going to beat Portugal. And I said, get out of my house, you have jinxed us. And sure enough, it's a jinx. Well, that happened last night with the Yankees and the Orioles.
The Yankees hit a little bloop single to win the game, and boy, did we need it. So we have to win, we Yankees, now. Because coming up next week, once we leave Baltimore, we play the Rangers. We have 3 at Fenway, 3 in Toronto, and then finish the season with 3 against the Rays.
Oh,
that is
God,
a brutal last week and a half, and it gets easier for the Red Sox.
Yeah, you have a brutal schedule. The Red Sox, not that it means anything, we have an easier schedule. Now we've got the Orioles for 3, then we have the Mets for 2 at home, 3 with the Yankees at home, but then we finish up with the Orioles again and the Nationals. With a lot of off days. It seems like we haven't had, Jonathan Lemire, it seems like we haven't had many off days. So, of course, as we've said 142 times this year, last night was the most important game of the year, but it was, and we ended up pulling it out at the end. But it's very tough.
Yeah, Joe, you and I deemed opening day the most important game of the year.
It was.
And it's only gotten harder since then. Yeah, this was the Red Sox first series win in Seattle since 2013. That's a house of horrors for the Sox on the West Coast, but they got a win. They won an extra innings, 2 out of 3 there. The schedule is softer. I just hope, Joe, for all of our sakes, that were we to miss the playoffs I hope we don't miss the playoffs by just one game, because that one game was that Yankees win last night.
That's me.
That you gave them. You put them on a silver platter.
Exactly.
And you said, New York Yankees, here you go. You can have this one in Baltimore.
Yeah.
We don't need it. All yours. That's on you, Joe.
You go to Yankee Stadium, there's going to be a plaque of Ruth, Gehrig, and Mantle, and then me, and it'd say, for sheer stupidity, jinxing
2021.
Jinxing the Red Sox 2021. But I want to go back, though. Toronto, man. Toronto's great.
Mika's like, nope, don't go back.
You know, let's talk for Mika about the 4, 5, and 6 hitters for the Blue Jays. I mean, seriously? they're tough up the middle. They're just, these guys just keep winning.
They're very good, Mika.
Oh, my God.
They're very good.
I see
good.
That. That's exciting.
Mika's giving a death stare,
okay.
So I'm going to step
These
back
guys
here.
Are like Secretariat at the Belmont.
Why don't you
man?
Wait for
they're
Mike Barnacle to come
turn.
On and talk about it?
All right,
this.
We'll stop now.
Where is Mike Barnacle? He keeps butt dialing.
Well, he's really angry at me because last night after I said, hey.
Image.
Does he know how to turn his phone off?
It's a tough image.
I mean, just stop. Just turn your phone off. Joining us now is the chairman
of the Metropolis. What's this about? She's so hateful. No. Why do you hate when loving would be so much easier?
No, but that's so, like, and my brother does it as well.
I get a lot hating of butt when dials. Loving would be so much easier?
No, it's just turn your phone off or, like, lock it and then do how, like, a little code, like 1111.
Are we
it's
ever going to get to
then
the
news?
Sorry,
we're
out of time, Congressman. Okay. Thanks for being here.
Just as long as nobody says
Barnacle?
The words Mike Barnacle and butt in a sentence
no.
again.
Where
feel
is
better.
Mike Barnacle? He's supposed to be on. So did he? Oversleep?
I don't think he's supposed to be on.
He's always supposed to be on.
Not today.
Why not? Okay.
It's just not on.
We're changing that.
You know, it's Willie and I, when we were at 2:30 in the morning, we were
going on every day.
We're curating the list. But
I'll fix that.
Are we ever going to get to the news?
Sean Patrick Maloney of New York is here. He talks a lot. Also with us, historian and Rogers Chair of the American Presidency at Vanderbilt University, John Meacham.
Oh, she says
his New York Times best-selling book, His Truth is Marching On, John Lewis and the Power of Hope, is available now in paperback. Love that. And Eddie Glaude is with us, the professor, is still with us as well.
So, Congressman, we're going to get with you second. I want to go to John first. John, 1 year later, the paperback book out. This was, of course, New York Times runaway bestseller because it told an extraordinary story in an extraordinary way. 1 year later, the paper book's out, and we think the Democrats may be moving towards passing H.R. 4, John Lewis's bill. But where are we today, a year later after your book first came out?
Well, thanks. You know, as you know, because you served with him, John Lewis was always about forward movement. He believed in the gospel. He believed in the country, despite the ferocity of the troops who were waiting for him at the foot of that bridge. And he would have absolutely continued to press forward. My own guess is that he would see this really insidious development that I hate to admit it, I totally lacked the imagination to see, which is this push in the states to create a culture, an ethos in which you just decertify what you don't like. Mm. You just change the rules. And Joe, you and I know from Southern politics that the old way to become governor was to run for attorney general. Now, the way to get ahead in Republican politics is to become the Secretary of State. And the Secretary of State is in charge of elections. And this notion that if you don't like reality, you fall back on this deeply un-American, deeply authoritarian impulse to just say, no, that's not the way the people voted. That's not legitimate. And it's what the Sixth was about. And it's heartbreaking to say, but it's what your former party is largely about now. And if we don't say it, you know, I'm not a Democrat, I'm not a Republican. I used to vote for both, but I'm not going to vote for the Republicans until there's a massive sanity infusion and a re-engagement with the Constitution itself. And I think what John Lewis would be saying is we have a duty to a higher justice. We have a duty to see each other not as enemies, but as neighbors. And you treat your neighbors as neighbors because that's the way you want to be treated. If you don't want your vote counted, the best way to do it is to try to not count somebody else's.
And how bitterly ironic that when John Lewis was marching across the Edmund Pettus Bridge, he was marching as a minority, in a minority population, against the majoritarian rule and got beaten up for it. And here we are in 2021, where people are trying to pass John Lewis's voting rights bill that a majority of Americans would support. And his party, the Democratic Party, is running against a party now who is not in the majority, who wants to govern the United States moving into the future in undemocratic ways. If they can't win elections, they will steal elections. And we all talk about the obstacles to voting that Republicans across the country have set up. John, you're right. That's not the dangerous part. The most dangerous part is that they're now giving secretaries of states, they're now giving state legislatures the power to decertify votes, to pick the votes they want picked. And if it's all white votes, they can pick all white votes. If they want to go into Fulton County or other counties where there are more black voters than white voters and try to decertify those votes, that's what's happening across the country. And, you know, Eddie Gloud, you talk about being in the minority, the Republicans in the minority now. Look at what they do when 70% of Americans say they don't want Roe v. Wade overturned. And it's been that way pretty consistently over the decades. What do? They overturn Roe v. Wade in the state of Texas through procedure, and the five justices allow them to do that. So the hell with the 70%. It's going to be the 30% who are going to rule in Texas. And on the other side of that, you take mandates for masks, for vaccines. That's a 70-30 proposition in a lot of areas, too. And what's happening there? There, they're the 30%. So, again, the minority wants to run over the majority and disrupt schools, disrupt education, disrupt learning, disrupt small business owners, disrupt entrepreneurs that want to build, want to create jobs, want to expand their community, disrupt churches, disrupt synagogues because of what they read on QAnon sites or what they read on Facebook. They're the 30%. They're the 35%. And now that they're on the other side of the Edmund Pettus bridge story and they're the minority, they've just decided they're going to cheat to win.
Yeah, Joe, I mean, in so many ways, what you've described are the elements of two Americas, right? Two very different Americas. And one side believes that America must look a certain way. They must have a certain set of commitments that are consistent with their religious beliefs, their ideological beliefs. And I'm not sure how we bridge this divide. And this takes me to John. And you know, I'm looking forward to seeing you this weekend in Chattanooga. And we can talk about this more broadly. But, you know, when we think about the attack on voting rights, when we think about the red herring of critical race theory, when we think about the statue of Robert E. Lee coming down in Richmond, Virginia, where are we, given John Lewis's sacrifice and given the conflict that we face? Where do you see the country in this moment of what seems to be cascading crises?
It's a great phrase, Eddie. And just to say, you know, we're going to be in Chattanooga because to commemorate the victim of a lynching more than 100 years ago that the city is finally coming to terms with in an interesting moment of reconciliation. And I think I like you, I suspect it sort of depends on what half hour you ask me on, you know, at 4:30, I might think, my God, we're dealing with this institutionalized, durable, white supremacist, unreasonable, illiberal, un-American, ultimately, in the idealistic sense, because at our best, we are about possibility. We don't always realize it, but that is what we are supposed to be about. And Joe Biden is president, by the way. 81 million people to 74 million people said, we don't want that. We don't want four more years of that. The terrifying thing, of course, is that 74 million people said, yeah, sign me up. Mm-hmm. And so my strong sense is that the work we have to do is to tell these stories, not because they're radical stories, but because they're American stories.
Now, you know, it's interesting that Eddie Gladd brought his dog to 30 Rock.
Yeah. Are you allowed to do that?
I think it's Meacham's dog.
I've never seen a dog come into 30 Rock, but brought his dog in there.
Comfort dog.
Meacham, thanks.
Hey, John
what's
Meacham.
His name?
It's a therapy.
What's your dog's name?
That's Clementine Meacham, named for Clementine Churchill.
No, I
and,
like it.
She's a She's a therapy dog for sort of troubled wasps.
I understand.
Poor Clementine.
By the way, John, our support group Zoom for troubled wasps coming up on Friday. Make sure you're there.
His truth is marching on. John Lewis and the Power of Hope is available now in paperback. John,
boy,
Mitchum,
it's a great
thank
book.
You.
It is a great book, John. Thank you so thank much you. For being with us. We really appreciate it, Congressman. First, let's talk about California, because it's one of these things where, you know, a CIA operative professional will tell you that their greatest successes are the successes that nobody recognizes, the bomb that doesn't go off. Well, the political bomb didn't go off in California. So everybody's saying, well, it's California, nothing to see here, move along. I'm not so sure. I think there's some things to read out of that that actually Republicans should be concerned about, even in the darkest, deepest, bluest state.
Amen. And that's why you see him acting all butthurt this morning, because, you know, they're going to talk about election fraud or something else. Fact is, we won, they lost. And when all the polls are done and all the dust settles, people show up at the polls or not. And what this was a good test of Biden versus Trump, of Newsom versus Elder, of the red team versus the blue team, and this toxic message of, you know, lying about the election, of playing footsie with white supremacists, taking away a woman's reproductive freedom. And what happened? 2-1, we beat them. And if you look at places like Orange County, forget about the whole state. Yeah, it's a blue state. Mm-hmm. Look at the competitive areas of that state. If I was a Republican member of caucus looking at those results, I would be very worried about running in a swing district on that message, because Larry Elder just got his butt kicked trying to run on that Trump stuff.
Okay, but on the other side, isn't there stuff that can be learned that Democrats need to be extremely worried about moving forward?
Always.
Okay,
always.
So what? Let's talk about
but,
that.
But I think Democrats spend more time bedwetting than learning. So let's learn, but let's win. And I think that what I've learned is that on doing hard things, you need to tell people what you're doing. Right now, we are building a bridge to the future. We talked about the bridge John Lewis walked over. I served with John Lewis. So, yeah, we fight for racial justice. And when they say critical race theory, we're going to tell you what we want to do, which is teach our history without politics. When they say defund the police, we want to tell them what we're doing, which is reforming police so good policing can be the norm. That's what Democratic leaders like the new mayor of New York City is going to do. So if you look at what's happening at the polls and you look at where we're moving the party, and more importantly, what the substance is, we are laying the foundation right now for a whole new generation of American prosperity that is inclusive. These are historic things we're doing in the rescue plan, in the Build Back Better plan, in the infrastructure plan, and we are getting them done. And that is what we're going to run on. And California suggests voters are going to prefer it.
Mm-hmm. And what do you learn from that race about mask mandates, vaccine mandates? The idea, we've heard the loudest Republican governors rail against that. But if you look at polling, it's actually a minority position. People want their kids to be safe in school. They're up for some mandates, if not all of them. It's something the president has leaned into. Obviously, he called for the mandate for small businesses. What do you take away from the vote in that respect?
Here's my message to Democrats. Own the anger. The one default switch the Republicans have is to be angry about something and to say it's someone else's fault. And we spend all our time explaining what we're trying to do. Right now, there is a reason that the pandemic's still going on. It's because they underplayed at the beginning, they dragged their feet on mask wearing, and now at every stage they are trying to stop the mask mandates where they make sense. We should embrace them. I want the person taking care of your mom or dad in a nursing home to be safe. I want the people in the military to be safe. I think there are places in healthcare and other places where mask mandates absolutely make sense. In this city right now, if you want to eat in a restaurant, you show proof of vaccination. That's private business saying what makes sense for them. We should embrace that. And we'll kick them all over the country, I think, on the politics. But more importantly, it will end the pandemic. Our policies are going to end this thing. Their policies are going to spread it. And we should own it.
I got to say, it's so stupid for Republicans. People who claim to be small government conservatives to tell an entrepreneur, to tell a family business, to tell a small business, you can't do what you have to do to keep your place safe. You can't do.
Hello. Is that you?
Is that you? You have an alarm.
Good Lord, give me your phone. What is with these people?
Everybody remain calm.
Is that Barnacle?
It's all going to be okay.
That's give
Barnacle.
Me that. I'll
apparently, I have
on.
To be on early morning TV this morning.
Oh, okay. Well, very good. You should probably said.
I should have been a little.
You should
earlier.
Have said about an hour earlier. Congressman.
I have no idea what that is.
So anyway, but let's talk. Let's talk about a couple of issues out of California that I thought could have made a difference.
Yeah.
That I've heard even a lot of Democrats complain about out there a lot. One is crime. The other is homelessness. And it's almost like in the past. Now, Eric Adams isn't this way. I don't think you're this way either. In the past, Democrats say, oh, it's hard. We can't talk about homelessness because that's what. And I just sit there thinking, wait a second. You're actually celebrating the fact that people who need help mentally are sleeping on grates at night? That's your vision of America? That's your vision of compassion? No, we need to spend more money. Have places where these homeless people, many times with mental health problems, can get off the street when it's 30 degrees at night. There's nothing liberal about letting the homeless population sleep on the streets of San Francisco or San Diego every night. So how do you get that message to Democratic candidates, especially in swing districts?
Look, you know, fix tough problems. And when you're fixing tough problems, you know, you're not going to get it all right. And there are tough balances, because often what happens with the problem you're talking about is you never provide the services on the other end. And so we criminalize the problem and we lock people up. You don't see them on the street, but now they're in the county jail. So we need comprehensive solutions. That's why I like what we're doing in the Build Back Better plan, addressing all of the needs the country has, from the climate to childcare, pre-K, community college, everything in between. Investing in our workforce, investing in our infrastructure, countering China, as you led the show with. And when you look at the comprehensive approach we're taking, I think if we can get through the other eye wall of this storm, you know, we came through one on January 6th, but we're in the middle of it. And Democrats need to vote. And if we can get through the next eye wall, we have laid the foundation for a whole new generation of peace and prosperity. But we've got to get through the next test.
So, Congressman, let's talk about Build Back Better. $3.5 trillion package on the table. It's now gone through the committees. All the markup has been done, as you know. I think there are a lot of people in this country who I talk to who've lost track of what's going on. We've been talking about these huge numbers and all these different spending packages. Where is it right now? And what's the likelihood that once you get together and the Senate has its plan, that it's actually going to make it through this Congress with that slim 50-50 margin in the Senate?
I think it's a very good chance. And we are moving this forward methodically. We're going to get it done in the next few weeks. And a little coaching. I think it would be wonderful if, instead of talking about whether it's 2.5 or 3.5 or 2.7 or 3.1, we actually talk about what's in it. We actually talk about the substance, because what's going to get done is universal pre-K for every kid in America. Transformational. What's going to get done is a permanent child care tax credit, a middle class tax cut for tens of millions of kids out there right now and families. That's changing lives. How about cheaper child care, cheaper health insurance premiums? How about workforce training so people can fill these jobs we're going to create with the infrastructure bill that is going to increase state DOT budgets by 20, 30, 40%. That's going to fix every crappy bridge in America. That's the substance of it, Willie, and it's going to be true whether it's 2.7 or 2.9. So this game we're playing about who won, who lost, I think misses the point. And that's the problem, because people need to know what we're doing. And Democrats don't tell people what we're doing. I think this is a trap we fall into. We need to tell them we did it. And more importantly, every Republican voted against things like the child tax credit. And that's the difference.
So it looks like the difference between Nancy Pelosi being speaker in 23 or Kevin McCarthy being speaker is going to come down to those 20-25 moderate to conservative swing district seats. How are the polls looking there? How are the battles going there? What are Democrats doing there?
Yeah, look, we are the underdogs in this fight. Let's be clear. They've stacked the deck and they're passing all these Jim Crow style voting laws around the country. But I got news for Kevin McCarthy. Sooner or later, he's going to have to come up with at least one idea for the future of America. It's not going to be enough just to suppress the vote and to stack the deck with gerrymandering. But doesn't surprise me we're running as underdogs. Remember, I'm a gay guy with an interracial family in a Trump district. I haven't won five times by thinking I'm ahead or it's going to be okay. You know, what you do is you look at the odds you're facing and you figure out how to win. And what I'm telling you is, in the most competitive districts right now, that California race a couple nights ago really tells you how the messages are matching up when voters get a chance to show up, not when pollsters kind of try to predict who's going to show up, but actual voters in swing districts, I feel pretty good. And if you look at our frontline, if you look at our battle-tested candidates, they're in competitive seats. Yeah, but we can win every one of those. So we're going to hold this majority and we're going to grow it. And we're going to do it because we have to get the country through this dangerous period and back out to the calmer seas and smooth sailing that we'll experience if we let the program the president has advanced get done and get working.
All right. Eddie Glaude's with us and has a question. Eddie.
Representative Maloney, I'm sitting here excited about how you've laid it out, but I'm also thinking about some of the obstacles that are in front of us. You have a debate within your caucus from progressives and moderates. And we saw it just recently with regards to the drug prescription component of the reconciliation bill. Talk a little bit about how you're going to navigate these differences that are evidenced in California, where you have moderate Democrats who are concerned about jobs and you have progressive Democrats who are concerned about climate in the southern part of the state, right? How do you navigate those differences in order to pass the Build Back Better plan and to address the future issues that confront the country today?
Well, so far, if you look at the first 10 months of this year, Speaker Pelosi has done this masterfully. But the truth is that both wings of the party and everybody in between has been incredibly constructive. Give my progressive brothers and sisters enormous credit for staying engaged in the policy debate, along with my moderate members. Look at what has happened. We're going to be a raucous debate on substance, on policy, because we actually care about the solutions, because we actually have opinions about which substantive policies are going to work better. The other side is trying to play politics to get back to power. So our debate is a family conversation, and I'm from a big Irish Catholic family. I expect it to be bumpy, but I also expect us to pull together, just like we did a couple of weeks ago when 100% of the Democrats in the House voted after a robust discussion, but 100% of us came back together to advance the president's plan. We're going to get the plan done. We're going to stick together. We're going to tell them we did it. And we're going to remind them that the other side is nuts and can't be trusted with power.
You're going to stick together.
They are,
yes.
Nuts.
Everybody's going to stick together.
Look,
Democrats understand they don't need a single Republican vote here.
Look, I think Nancy Pelosi can count. That's what
yeah.
I think.
Oh, she's
and, I think and I think that if you look at the performance over the last 10 months,
yeah.
you would never bet against her.
No.
And look, we're going to have a bunch of opinions. There'll be some twisted metal and broken glass. There always is. But at the end of the day, we're going to get it done.
Okay.
Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney, you can have your phone back.
Thank you for setting your alarm.
Sorry about that.
An hour late.
Maybe I'm late for my next meeting.
There you are.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.